Hi, John.
Hello.
Do you know what I hate?
What do you hate?
My lack of three hands, because I need three hands to feel up them titties.
Man, they go to that same shot of her exposing her breasts three times, too.
Yeah, in the movie Total Recall.
Total Recall.
Or we can podcast that whole sale for you. Hat tip to blank check. Look at those cavemen. Take a look at the low man, beating up the wrong guy. Oh man, wonder if you'll ever know who's in the best-selling show. Is there life on Mars? Now, audience at home, I want to tell you something. Alex did research. And I read We Can Remember That For You Wholesale in preparation for this book, which is what the movie Total Recall was based on.
And how is it?
It is, if you took all of the Mars stuff out of this movie, it's the exact same thing as the short story.
Mm.
Like, it's just, he goes to Total Recall, that stuff immediately becomes part of its life. And the question is whether or not that was what actually happened and there was a memory block and that's why he requested that specific fantasy,
mm-hmm.
or the fantasy fucked up and now he thinks it's real. And at the end of it, he goes back and the exact same thing happens and it closes on that.
Mm. Yeah. Dan O'Bannon, who, this thing had gone through like so many different iterations of scripts, and Dan O'Bannon, who wrote some of them, who is behind Alien.
Well, wait, before you finish your point, sorry, real quick. Do you know that this movie is somewhat responsible for Alien being made?
No.
So he was writing this movie, and they realized that the special effects weren't there yet. So because he couldn't get the movie made, he went off with whoever else and wrote Alien.
Ah.
So if the special effects were slightly better, Alien may not have been written.
This also is responsible for Minority Report. Yeah, Dan O'Bannon talking about the short story is like, it ends very abruptly. And like, I need, the movie can't be that. So it had to do something else. And it went through some like wild different shifts. One of them being Cronenberg
was attached to it, yeah,
for a while. And he wanted to have William Hurt play the main guy. And then like Richard Dreyfuss was at one point attached. And his was a lot more like, he was the one that brought, then introduced the mutants. Like they took that from his script and it was a lot less, yeah, action movie and more like a memory piece, you know, like that he kind of went on to do in Spider.
Quatto is so fucking Cronenberg, it's ridiculous.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Benny's arm seems very Cronenberg-y as well. But like, yeah, it just wasn't working out. And there's some neat concept art online of different stuff, but that he did. But that didn't happen. And then it ended up, after a bunch of different rewrites, I forget the name of the gentleman that they brought in. Goldman. Gary Goldman. Wrote some of, or was a writer on Big Trouble in Little China. And that's, I think, where this becomes so much more of an action piece.
Yeah.
And then with Paul Verhoeven helming it, it's deliciously satirical. I wonder if anyone else noticed that.
I don't know that I agree it's satirical. This feels like for a Verhoeven movie, Not that he's playing it straight, but it's less satirical than like a Starship Troopers or...
Sure, and satirical is not the right word. I just wanted to quote that Simpsons line, but No, it's fine, but I am getting at that, like, it's not perfectly just straightforward. You could perhaps, like, it's a touch ironic, I guess. Because if you go from the idea of that this indeed is a dream... Then like all the hyper gore, hyper violence side of it,
yeah,
is played up. And I think he by leaning into that, it becomes this straight action movie, but also you can watch it without realizing that it's this other thing as well.
Yeah, because it can add to the question of whether or not the events are happening or they're implanted memories. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, and especially like some of the kind of wonky writing that's the wonky writing of the writers and his brain. I mean, the writers in story, the guys at Recall, and yeah, his brain kind of breaking down, and that's why everything goes fucking weird. It goes to a very strange place in the third act.
Yeah, or even just like shitty action movie one-liners. You know, yeah, what I mean? Like, yeah, you're gonna write those in.
Here's so I didn't know about the Dreyfus thing before watching this movie this time, or knowing about the sequel. They should remake this again, but do it the Dreyfus way. Not with Richard Dreyfus, but with like a smaller person. Because I think it'd be a really interesting story. Because this one, Arnold Schwarzenegger, it's very believable that he's actually a spy and that his brains were implanted. Because right. Here's the thing. He's a hunk.
Mm-hmm.
He's married to Sharon Stone.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow he's depressed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not saying that's how depression works, but in movies, that's how depression works. Uh-huh. You're not supposed to, like, he's got a nice apartment. He's got a full screen TV. Things are doing great for him. So him being like, oh, ho-hum, my life's so boring, I need a total recall. No, obviously you're a fucking spy in disguise. Look at you. Look at your fucking arms. You have to. But no, if this were like Dreyfus, just a normal-looking human,
right.
I buy both sides of that. I buy he's a humdrum guy working a shitty job. I also buy that he's a spy, because that's how spies are supposed to work. But Arnold mm-hmm. is, no, obviously you're a spy. Look at you. Look at you, monster. You giant, giant man.
See, but I think that plays perfectly as well for that blurring of the lines, too, where it's like, well, obviously you're a spy because you look like that. But is he? But yeah, and I think like because David Cronenberg has said like he does not like the action movie take. They went with it somewhat for that reason as well, that it seems kind of obvious that it's much more just sort of straightforward. But I do give Verhoeven the credit of like, and he's, I listened to the commentary. People have talked for a long time, like, oh my God, that commentary is hilarious, because it's just Arnold Schwarzenegger just talking about things on screen, which I guess he does in commentary.
Yeah.
And in a podcast where we just explain the movie, that doesn't seem like that dumb of a thing, but maybe that should tell me something, but I refuse to learn anything. But like Paul Verhoeven goes on and on about how he tried to do stuff so it could go either way. He's very obsessed with the dual realities that are going on.
The Verhoeven commentary track that I've heard of is apparently in Showgirls. Now, I've not heard this the actual commentary, but apparently the Showgirls commentary track is him just pointing out which extras he fucked. When they show up in the back, it's like, oh, her. Yeah. Now, I heard that somewhere else. I may have heard that on another podcast talking about this movie. So credit to them if I'm stealing that. And if that's not true, then credit to them for making up something funny. But that sounds very true to me. But I'm not going to watch the Showgirls. Fucking, you know, it's not going to happen.
But I also like, particularly in the era of movie making that we're in now, I like that they don't... It doesn't come down one way or the other.
Yeah.
Like if you want to make the argument that this, he's still in recall, like you can, if it's not, it's fine. It's an action movie. It works. I don't think it's like, I don't think it's as, I'm going to say cerebral maybe as Minority Report. If that's even the right word that I'm looking for, but like you can just enjoy this as a dumb action movie and walk away from it.
No, 100%.
Whereas Minority Report like demands that you kind of pay like, this is what we're talking about with pre-crime. This is what we're getting at. Whereas this one's just like, whoa, isn't that kind of crazy? Now Arnold Schwarzenegger's going to shoot a guy.
No, when I watched this when I was a kid, which says a lot about me, I don't even know if I even understood you're supposed to question the reality of it. I just, it was fucking Arnold Schwarzenegger kicking ass. And it's like, yeah, he's kicking ass. This is great.
Yeah, and the bad guys tried to fool him and he got him.
I'm 11 and this is fucking terrific. Mm-hmm. Also, mm-hmm. my parents really didn't like help me when I was a child and let me watch these movies when I was 11. You know, I saw...
Yeah, that was supposed to be the talk and your dad just put on Total Recall
I saw fucking They Live in the theater.
Oh, wow.
With my dad. Now, They Live is a hyper-violent movie featuring tits. They came out in, what, 87-ish? So I was 6 or 7 years old and my dad took me to They Live.
Yeah.
The fuck is wrong with my family? Anyway, let's talk about the movie. So... we get introduced to him and Sharon Stone, and they're in like a really good loving relationship that's, she's not too jealous that he's cheating on her while sleeping. They've got a good, healthy sex life, and like their life is kind of great. And for some reason, he's depressed. Sorry. But here's the real question with this setup. Arnold Schwarzenegger, do you think he's good at sex, or is he one of those kind of four pumps? Oh, was it good for you? You know,
it's a good question. I suppose it depends what you're looking for. In a sexual partner, but
more than four pumps,
right? But I think, like, I mean, He famously performs cunnilingus because there was that like article in Premiere a long time ago
that's
where he got busted and he's like, eating is not cheating. And so he's attentive to her needs.
Okay, no. This goes. See, I was thinking he was going to be one of those kind of pre-20th century. Not that the 20th century did much better, but it's only a man's. The man's the only one that's supposed to feel anything. You know, just four pumps. You know, kind of thing. But yeah, I forgot that he does.
No, that's Tom Hanks.
No, I think Tom Hanks likes to be pegged.
Oh, okay. Thing you do.
No, Tom Hanks feels like he's got some sex to him. But yeah, I questioned Arnold, but I forgot about the cunnilingus thing. So yeah, all right, good for Arnold. He's a good and attentive lover. I'm proud of him. The things I like about this movie, for being the most unsubtle movie ever, is there's some really good subtle shit. So when he's at work, and his work essentially is just making his arms look fabulous, using what do you call those things? Jackhammer?
Jackhammer, yep.
Jackhammer, barely even know him. His friend, who I used to know that actor's name, is really subtle but like indicative when he talks about recall that there's something else going on.
Mm-hmm.
So even if the movie is a product of his brain being tampered with, it's being tampered with since before we know about recall.
Right.
Before he goes in. Because he when he talks to his friend, what is it, Arnold? Did I just say that?
Leo?
Oh, whatever. Who cares? It's yeah. Oh, no. Arnold is Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, that's...
You know, his friend looks like... Look at that guy, that actor, and think of the name Arnold. He looks like a more of an Arnold. So anyway, his like little wink at like, oh, recall, you can't go there. That like, no, we don't want to do that. We don't want to go to Mars. No, we don't want to go to Saturn. Even when he goes into recall where... It's like, I want to go to Mars. It's like, I want to do the Saturn package. It's like, everybody's talking bad of it. So it's like, oh, is this real? Because I think the movie, I think it's pretty explicit that it's his brain falling apart. Except there's a lot of evidence that it's not, which is really well done.
Yeah, they tell you everything like, you get the, like, but right before he goes under, like the movie has given you everything so far, like the why this might be happening in terms of like, he's seen Cohagen on the news. He's heard the name Quado. You know, he's the leader of the guerrillas, or as Paul Verhoeven says in the commentary, the guerrillas.
Really? That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Like Leo has implanted a thing in his brain about how like, oh, you could get lobotomized if you do this. And then like, yeah, you see like as a split second, like before he, not like a split second, but before he goes under, you see the love interest that he like builds her out of, I'm guessing, that he's been dreaming about. So it's either like, you know, is this part of an obsession thing that he's having, and that just happens to feed into it or whatever.
Again, all the parts of the story that he chooses from like almost a choose your own adventure book end up happening, not in the way that you think, but are in the story. But what's interesting though, is that shit is seeded before he gets to recall. So like, if we are watching a story through altered memory, it starts before there, which I just think is interesting. So I want to tell you a small little anecdote about that lady in this movie, Maria Conchita Alonso. Because watching this movie, I realized that I have conflated the opening to Running Man in this movie in my head, which I believe that is Maria Conchita Alonso.
That indeed.
So when he meets her on Mars, I'm like, wait, when did they run through the airport? And he puts on, I'm like, that's a different movie. Like, I mean, I'm fucking 41 watching. I've seen this movie a bunch of times. Those two movies have 100% the first acts melded. And I'm like, oh, it's because it's the same thing. It just, instead of going into Mars, he goes into a game show. Like, it's the same setup. It was shocking for me to find out that that wasn't her.
Which I will say on the topic of actresses, I really like Sharon Stone in this for her small part.
Oh, she's great.
I think. She's like her ability to just go like menacing to sweet and like back is great. And I guess that was like, that's what made Paul Verhoeven be like, oh, Basic Instinct. Let's call Sharon Stone. Cause
and good physicality to too. Like during the fight stuff. Oh, yeah. She really buys. You know what you were surprised by this is. So when I think about Arnold and his fight style, I think of clobbering blows, just punching, but he does a lot of kicking and up like knee lifts and shit in this movie, which I don't remember it that way. And it's like, man, this guy actually seems athletic. Obviously, he's always athletic in a weightliftery way. But this is the first time watching him, like, oh, he's, like, athletic. Like,
Yeah.
He probably can jump high. You know, like, I know that's like a small difference, but it was weird to see him like mobile and kind of fluid in his motion. Basically, I wanted to fuck him a little bit.
Sure. He's a handsome fellow.
Just like four strokes, though.
Right. But it is interesting that he like, if this is all a dream or not, that how easily he becomes a secret agent. Like, oh yeah, I just killed some people. It's fine. You know what I mean? Whereas if the dream thing, if this is like, you know, part of it, it's, you know, maybe necessarily not, you know, would be implied that like you would just have this ability to do this stuff. If it's not real, but like in the real world, it's all of a sudden he can, you know, where does all this come from? But we don't know much about Hauser other than that he's a conniving shithead. I do like in one of the original drafts that he was, Quaid ends up being this like synthetic being that is essentially the last remnants of Martian, the ancient Martian culture. Like he's basically Martians shoved into this being. And the reason they want to like erase his brain is because they can't kill him, because he can always sense when danger is about to happen. So by erasing his brain or whatever, so the like one of the original drafts, it ends with him basically like figuring it out and becoming god of Mars.
That's actually kind of cool.
Yeah, it's very cool. But they just went, no, we want a more sort of externalized ending than that. We want like a chain, a physical like a change we can see, not just somebody going like, oh, turns out I'm god. The end.
Well, I mean, the thing with him becoming a spy easily—that's what we were talking about the Dreyfus thing before—is he's 6 foot plus. Made of muscle.
Yeah.
Even if you're hesitant, it's like, I think it'd be hard for him to be bad in a fight because he's just a fucking monster. Like, I could be a well-trained MMA guy and he would just fucking destroy me because he's like a monster, you know? So,
I haven't watched it, but essentially, yeah, like it sounds like a nobody, that Bob Odenkirk movie, where it's like he's some schmo and then it turns out he's actually a kick-ass CIA guy or something.
It is very nobody, yeah. Yeah. You didn't see Nobody?
I still haven't watched it yet. No.
Oh, that's surprising to me.
Not out of any sort of like, I just haven't gotten
around. I mean, I hear you loud and clear. You fucking hate Bob Odenkirk with all your passion and soul. Got it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hi, my name is Alex. I read the short story, and I'm going to tell you a scene in the short story that somewhat gets Paul Verhoeven off the hook.
Mm.
So, in the book, it's, what's the character's name in this movie?
Quaid.
Do you know his other name? That was what I was trying to
Hauser.
Figure out. No. I mean, Quaid, what's his full name?
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
No, like Randy Quaid. Like Quaid.
Douglas Quaid, I think.
Douglas Quaid. He's Douglas Quayle. Oh, yeah. In the short story, which seems like such an arbitrary. Anyway, so Douglas Quayle, who's going after Patty Mayonnaise, deep cut, goes to recall. And in the movie, the receptionist is painting her nails digitally, which anybody watching this now, you have to realize that was like groundbreaking technology at the time.
It's pretty cool.
I mean, we're going to talk about the special effects of this movie because it's like the main reason to watch it. But she's changing her nail colors and, you know, that's the thing. In the book, she is completely naked from the waist up. And every time he re-enters the office, she has painted her tits a different color.
Yeah, that sounds like Philip K. Dick.
Which is crazy, because you think all the fucking objectifying sex shit would come from Verhoeven. No. Some of that was... You know, to be fair, Philip K. Dick is actually pretty sexless. Like, he's...
Yeah, but I mean, like, that seems a little bit more like groovy, psychedelic kind of stuff. Like, happen on an episode of Laugh-In.
I didn't take it that way. Because, like, it's not written sleazy. It's written, like, this is just a fucked up, weird, psychedelic future. But I wanted to point it out. So, goes to recall, and this is, like, our kind of how we get introduced to the whole story, that the agency is coming after him. And that starts the chase. And the chase... it started by him getting in a Johnny Cab, which looks like an Elon Musk Cybertruck. And Johnny Cab is Robert fucking Picardo.
Robert Picardo, yeah.
And I love
that guy.
One, I'm like, his voice looks, it sounds familiar. The puppet head turns around. I'm like, oh, it's Robert Picardo.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Which is amazing. They spent tens of thousands of dollars to make that puppet look like Robert Picardo for no fucking reason. That puppet could look like Gabbo and have Robert Picardo voice.
Well, I think it's more that Robert Picardo looks like that kind of weird archetype. Yeah, I guess so,
but still, you know? It's just, they wasted a shitload of money to have that work out.
Yeah, I love all the practical effects in this. Rob Bhutan, who did a bunch of stuff for The Thing.
I love his country. And,
yes, but it's some great, great physical stuff.
Yeah.
Like even the stuff, and I think Arnold Schwarzenegger, even though like when you can tell it's, you know, it's a fake prop or whatever, like I think his head is good for puppet makers. Like just his very angular kind of face just seems like it translates well into being a phony face.
What's interesting is you compare Terminator, which came out in, I don't know, 84-ish?
Mm-hmm.
And this movie, which came out in 90. So there's a practical effect of Arnold's, a fake Arnold head that happened in that movie. So you can see the eye shining through. Remember that scene? Mm-hmm. And then The practical head in this movie, 6 years later, looks 1,000 times better.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll just cut to it since we're talking about it. But he in his chase, there's a tracker stuck in his head, which in the short story, there's a telepathic circuit in his head. So the people chasing him can read his thoughts. Very Philip K. Dick thing.
That's extremely Philip K. Dick.
But when he shoves this child's arcade game claw hook up his nose to pull this thing out, and his nose is stretched, and there's the light diffraction coming through his mm-hmm. nose, and his face looks so fucked up, but it's a puppet, but it's real. Like, if you were watching in standard definition from far away enough, that's a
across the field.
But given there's no distance that the one in Terminator would make you believe that it's an actual face. This one, that's really fucking good.
It elicits an emotional response way more than if it was just CG. Like I think about like the first thing that came to my mind when you described it was the bit in The Matrix where Keanu Reeves touches the mirror and the stuff like goes into his face. And like it's a cool effect, but it's all CG.
Yeah.
Whereas even in that one, like, and this was probably CG as well, but like when his mouth disappears, it's a lot more like that seems more visceral and practical. Whereas, this, like, it's just because it's real and tangible. It you know, it's a lot to me. It seems like a lot more identifiable with.
Yeah. And it looks so cool.
Happening. Yeah. And it looks great. Also, when he's like has the dream of being on Mars and his eyes bulging out of his skull, like those are ridiculous. And I love them.
All right. Well, let's put a pin in every time we see practical effects. Let's bring it up and just bore the shit out of the audience. And that sounds sarcastic, but really, I want to make sure that we give because they're so fucking good. All right.
They're great.
So the guy from work, Bob Hoskins from the Super Mario Brother movie, attacks. He kills them all. And he goes home and his wife is playing Wii tennis.
Yes.
Which you have to understand that's 30 years prescient. Good job, this movie.
You figured out we'd still be playing tennis digitally.
No, but digital tennis to work. I mean, that's a pretty fucking spot on. When people talk about like, oh, this movie predicted the future. No, like that's an actual future. That's not some Simpson shit where it's like they were going for a joke and they did 1700 and one went mm-hmm. right. They literally went, no, in order to exercise, you're going to have a video game. That's pretty fucking good.
I also talked about like the dealing with his buddies or whatever. I love the architecture in this movie, which is a weird thing to say, but they filmed it all in New Mexico. In Mexico because of the new brutalist architecture that was down there. It looks great, particularly for this kind of like corporatized world. And like Mars, while this movie was, you know, a huge blockbuster for its time, now the sets might look kind of cramped and cheap, but I think that works for what they were going for on Mars.
Yeah.
Is that it is this sort of ad hoc put together thing. People are mutants because Cohagen has built these shitty domes that don't really work.
Yeah.
And I love it.
It's the kind of place you don't want to raise your kids. In fact, it's cold as hell.
Mm-hmm.
That's from the Bible, John. The Bible.
I've read it.
David Bible. you know what I like about this too? So the 80s. And I know this is 90, but it's the 80s.
Yeah.
I wish, and I know we have FaceTime and open source ways to talk to each other. I wish video phones like this and Demolition Man had caught on.
Mm-hmm.
Just like in your, like a centralized, like this is the acceptable place where I'm going to video chat you.
Yeah.
I like that. Even though like my phone is infinitely better than what they have. There's there's an elegance to that and I think a sociological societal point that would be helpful for us to be like, there's a dedicated conversation pit, you know?
Right. Yeah. Rather than like, I'm doing a video chat at a restaurant for some reason.
Yeah.
In public and without headphones on. Yes. And,
yeah. Anytime they show up, anytime they show up in movies. Now, Demolition Man is better because that lady called and her boobs were hanging out.
So it's more just the tech, the screens in this one needed to have more of a boob window.
Yeah. Just a larger thing. And also, but I mean, for me, it's like, I think I'm convinced I'm never going to see a tit again unless it's on, you know, like in a movie. But if I had a big ass video phone wall, someone could accidentally call me.
You could just start Romeo dialing. And yeah, maybe that would happen.
Yeah. It's like the chat roulette of the past right. Future. Yeah. Uh-huh. The days of future past.
My favorite use of that is later on in the film, but when Ronnie Cox is Cohagen. Is called, I think it's like during the attack on the club in Mars, on Mars, and Richter goes out to answer the phone and, it's like Cohagen's on the line and Cohagen is like turned away from the screen. And when Richter shows up, he like turns to, dramatically. Yeah. It's like, get him.
Yeah.
I would do that shit all the time.
Oh, fuck
if you were like waiting to pick up the phone, I would turn around very dramatically.
Just be like under the desk and pop up.
Yeah. Like how long was he sitting there just waiting? Yeah. Like, oh man, I can't wait till he shows up.
Well, there's another window screen, a bigger one on the other side of him. He's just like looking at some tits.
Yeah. He's on his boob phone.
Yeah.
No one else has it. Only Cohagen has it.
So I do love the brutalist architecture. And I wrote that note. I love brutalist architecture. And glad you said that, because as I wrote that, I'm like, I don't know where I got that word from. Like, I don't know what architecture term, but when I type brutalist, I'm like, it feels right. But
that's the only one I can readily identify.
So another thing this predicted during the fight that him and Sharon Stone have, he goes, clever girl.
Yes.
Because little, you know, she's also mutant. She's part velociraptor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just in the brain. One interesting thing we've kind of glanced over with this is the purpose of recall seems primarily to be getting you laid or making you think you got laid. That is such a huge part of, they keep going on and on about it. I'm like, well, let's build your perfect, you know, lady type. And the guy the salesman guy is like, man, come on. I mean, I'm sure that's a great sales tool and, you know, a lot of weirdos. But I also can't help but like wonder, and I know that's kind of the whole point of the whole thing, but just like, so let's say this works as intended, that this is the total recalling, this is how it's supposed to work. So I go and I'm like, oh, I want to do the James Bond thing, the secret agent spy package. I go, yeah, all right. So I have this memory that I went to Mars and did that. So do I know that was fake when I leave? Or am I convinced that happened? And then if I meet you and you did the same thing and it's like, wait, what? Your story doesn't make any sense. I saved Mars. What are you talking about? You saved Mars.
See, okay. So that second point, there's not answered, but in the short story, it's answered. And maybe in the movie, I forget. They've now blended together. But in the they say, we will wipe all memory of you showing up to this office.
Okay.
That's part of the package deal, is that you forget that you went into the office to remember all this Mars shit. And in the short story, the first one, like the saving Mars and all that stuff, was the secondary story. The first one, I won't get into it, but they make a point of saying you forget your, or you forget that you went to Total Recall, which is funny because it's a very Philip K. Dick thing as well, that he's like very like kind of anti-capitalist. And what he's saying is, oh, you're going to forget you ever went here. So you're going to show back up and pay us again.
Right.
There's a whole like, and it's one of his more clever kind of shitting on the world.
Yeah. Well, and I like that just cause it is like this horrible, harmful thing. And I was thinking about like how bizarre that is. And then I remember that I give myself brain damage 8 hours a day, looking at my fucking computer and being online. And it's like, well, you know, we let that happen.
The interesting part of it too, is like talking about like, you know, it's there for fucking, is the world. I mean, again, it's very predictive in the world that we live in now. And I'm not trying to be like, you know, old man talking, but we have switched to a kind of Instagram style of life wherein if it's not documented, it doesn't matter. It's more the
memory. Yeah. It's all performance.
So, but it's the memory of the thing that's important, not actually being there and experiencing it. It's documenting it. So like this recall thing would fit perfectly in the society we have now of just like, if you just want to remember the thing, because that's all that matters to them is, you know, the past tense, not actually being there and being present.
Right.
I'm saying this is anti-Ram Dass.
But, you know, that's a good, you know, you could check out our episode about Ghostbusters Afterlife. That's a very, a thing we touch on there, which is like, yeah, it's the idea of remembering Ghostbusters, not Ghostbusters itself.
Yeah.
It's that remember rather than, man, Ghostbusters was great.
But at least in the original Ghostbusters, Ray got blown by a ghost.
That's true.
And he remembers it. And that's the key thing.
Does he? Because it's never brought up again.
I just want...
Was
I
that
want
implanted by recall?
Ectoplasm and cumsies. There's a one-to-one.
Nope, absolutely not.
So he beats the shit out of Sharon Stone. Well, she holds up her end pretty well against Orange fucking Schwarzenegger.
Well, and I like that. Like, after they fight for a bit, they like, all right, let's chat about it.
Yeah,
which
yeah.
is kind of like a very sort of they live kind of thing.
During the night, one of the most brutal sequences in this film, he's running away and he's like running up an escalator. And some poor guy that's on an escalator just becomes his human shield and just gets lit the fuck up.
Well, he gets shot once and Arnold Schwarzenegger uses him as a human shield. Yeah, yeah. Like, he's actually shot and Schwarzenegger's like, well, why not? In the commentary, he's like, what else are you going to do in that situation?
I mean, he's not wrong.
But yeah, that guy gets, and I think the MPAA was very down on that, but yeah, they light that dude up. This is a brutal movie.
Yeah, it really is. He gets in a Johnny cab. The point is, he doesn't pay for the Johnny cab, so for some reason that causes the Johnny cab to self-destruct.
So the thing's already busted, and because he throws it in the back, and then when he stops, he gets out of the car, it like, then yeah, goes, oh, well, I guess I'm broken now, and just drives into a thing and blows up. And like, for the story, it gives them a reason, the bad guys are going to be like, oh my god, there's this huge heat signature over here, let's go investigate. But it doesn't really make any sense why it happens.
Yeah.
Because also, like, what is, and they joke about it in the commentary too, like, what was in that car that makes it just explode like that? Because it is a fireball.
Gasoline?
Yeah.
I mean, they are in a pressurized, oxygen-rich environment because they have to pump in oxygen.
No, this is still on Earth.
Well, Earth is a pressurized, oxygen-rich environment.
Checkmate. You got me.
Yeah.
But yeah, so he, and then this is the scene we're talking about where he's pulling the thing out of his head. And this is another thing that I think Philip K. Dick does, or at least it's certainly in Minority Report as well, where it's that like, look, like, here's a way out, but it's from a source that you can't really trust, that it involves harm to you. Like in the case of Minority Report, it was the doctor that was going to give him the new eyes. And he's like, guess what? You screwed me over in the past. Now I'm going to do your eyes.
Oh, yeah.
And this one, it's like, hey, it's me. You don't know what's going on. Shove this thing in your brain. Trust me.
Yeah.
You know, and I like that leap that you have to take, or the,
you know, what's great about that too, there, Schwarzenegger is limited in his acting, and as Quaid he's pretty just actiony, but he's kind of electric as Brubaker or whatever.
As Hauser.
He's like, hey, buddy, I guess you're a little confused right now. He's like really laid back and kind of cool. He actually reminds me of that weird bodybuilder in Brazil video we referenced earlier,
mm-hmm.
which probably isn't in any edit ever. But like, where he's just kind of like high on a beach. He's like, hey, whatever, man. I guess I'm dead now. That's what happens.
I do like him also, like, right before he gets into the recall chair. That moment where he's like smiling serenely.
Yeah.
I don't know. For some reason, that really tickled me. Like, I was like, I totally bought it. Arnold Schwarzenegger is very excited about this.
Let's talk about the most important part of this movie. It's amazing I've held off this long. Hey, fuck it. You've got your mouth open. John, can you predict what I'm about to say?
No.
Oh. Goal fucking Ducat is in this movie.
Yes. Yeah.
So Mark Alamo. I don't know if that's how you say his last name. Oh my god. And it just, the second I see him, I'm like, oh, it's my boy. Like,
yeah.
The best villain that's ever been on an episodic TV show. Like,
yeah,
or serialized TV show.
He's also a great villain in Arena, a terrible, like, I think maybe Roger Corman space
beat him
up. It's very dumb, but he's great.
I've either seen Arena or seen like a Red Letter Media about Arena.
But real quick, as because now we're on Mars, but what I like is how we get to Mars. And apparently, this was done because they had to cut. There was going to be a scene of him getting on a spaceship, and they had to cut it for budgetary reasons.
Yeah.
But after he gets the chip pulled out of his brain, he the tracker, he puts it into a chocolate bar and throws it, and some rats go after it and start dragging it around. So the bad guys are chasing that. And he has smashed the video screen that his that had Hauser on it telling him what to do and how to take off the bug. And when the bad guys find out they've been had, the video thing is playing in a loop of him just going, "Get your ass to Mars, get your ass to Mars."
Yeah.
And Richter, played by Michael Ironside, is so pissed he shoots the rat. That is the juiciest rat that has ever existed.
It's a juicy fucking rat.
Yeah. Someone just dumps a can of Smuckers on the screen. But I just like that that's the transition to get to Mars, is like, then that red becomes the red skies of Mars. And yeah, it's just told you, go to Mars, go to Mars, go to Mars, and then you're on Mars. So we're dispensed with the entire travel thing of getting to Mars, and I thought that was a cool little bit of shorthand.
And also this done. Like all-knowing organization that's chasing him, literally headed by the leader of Mars, can't figure out if he's on a fucking spaceship to Mars.
Yeah, which is so interesting. I mean, again, for the whether or not it's real or not, and how they play with that later, how you figure out how, like, Cohagen specifically says, like, I've had this in works forever, and then Richter fucked it up.
Yeah.
And yeah, throughout it, yeah, he's got, like, you know, so you don't even know if for the level of it not being a dream, for it being real, that it was this constructed reality that even the guy that constructed it couldn't control because Richter fucked it up.
Yeah.
And what was actually in place. So maybe that's why you were seeing Melina before in the when he was selecting his female partner. Was it Cohagen set that up or not? I don't know. But again, I like this movie, like, nods some stuff at you, but doesn't specifically tell you.
I mean, that's a good point. So let me bring up something incredibly stupid. Michael Ironside runs really weird.
Mm.
Like, kind of Steven Seagal style. Like, he does, like, weird, like, jazz hands with his hands when he runs. If anybody out there has not watched this movie and decided to afterwards, just pay attention to Michael Ironside's running. It's weird. And John and I are of the church of Michael Ironside. We love the man.
Yeah. He was initially, I guess, supposed to be RoboCop. Was in talks to possibly RoboCop, but, like, had too many, like, script objections or something like that. Like, too many creative disagreements.
Well, that was a bad move, because he would have been a good RoboCop.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that he, if he would have the, I guess maybe because I prefer my Michael Ironside bad rather than good.
Mm.
That, because I think he can bring a humanity to it. I just like watching him be a bad guy.
Yeah, I just think he could shoot a dick off. It's the only scene I've seen from RoboCop.
I'd rather have him be a Clarence Boddicker. No offense to Kurtwood Smith, who's great, but, like, I just like Michael Ironside being a bad guy.
Yeah, he's pretty great.
But though RoboCop's great, doesn't need to change.
Outshone by Ronnie Cox, who I forget Ronnie Cox as a person until any movie I watch from the 80s. I'm like, this is the best bad guy that's ever
existed.
He's
so fucking, I mean, even when he's on The Next Generation, he's fucking great. Like,
oh yeah, he's like the shitbag Admiral, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love Ryan Cox is just fantastic.
Yeah, he's terrific. All right. So here's another thing to talk about. We're in a Alex Talks About Special Effects section. He shows up to Mars in a large woman suit.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple. One, that pillar that goes out of her ear.
Yes.
Physics doesn't. I mean, the space doesn't work. It's like, did you ever see Farscape? Also written by Dan O'Bannon.
No.
There's a villain, Scorpius, that has that to keep him cool. He's got, like, cooling rods in his head that pop out like that. But, like, you see the intense pain involved. He's like, when it comes out, it's, like, really gross and horrible. And this is just, I don't know, we don't know how physics work. But it's an amazing model. It looks so fucking good.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And then follows up with, he's on a train talking to one of the guys that's friends with Al from Tool Time. It's the only other thing I know that actor from.
I had that same thought. He was those three construction guys. They played in a band at one point. Yeah.
So they're on a train. And anybody that's born after us, this is not going to seem impressive to you. But they're on a train. And then in, like, one shot cut outside the train, seeing him talk to that guy in the window of the miniature, because it's a miniature, and then back out from there. That is a mind-bendingly complicated shot for 1990. Yeah. That is so fucking good.
I love the miniatures in this movie.
Yeah.
I mean, and Verhoeven and the Jost Vacano, if I'm saying that right, the cinematographer, like, the way they just glide around them, and, like, particularly when he's flashing back to the, or flashing to whatever, the Martian core and the technology, how that, like, that moves through that is just so cool, and just again really gives it such a sense of scale and space.
It really is a gorgeous, gorgeous movie, like, from every aspect. It's shocking. It's rare that you go back to an action movie of the 80s and like, oh, this looks good, is the thing you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, he gets to Mars and he goes to the Hilton. I had a runner by notes about how Quaid might be a fucking idiot. And this is one of the major points. He goes to the Hilton to check in and he uses the ID that other him told him about on the video tape.
For Brubaker.
The guy at the desk is like, oh, you have something in your safe deposit box. He drops it out and he sees this a poster saying like the hottest tits in town are found here or whatever. In the back, Venus. It says, for a good time, find Melina. And he goes, oh, do you have a pen I can borrow? And of course, I don't even know what accent that was, but he gets a Sharpie because he didn't ask for a Sharpie. He asked for a pen and then writes down Melina, stares at it. He's like, yep, that's my handwriting.
Mm-hmm.
How fucking dumb do you have to be as a human being? How do you not know your handwriting?
Well, you don't know what's real anymore. Because are you you?
I mean, I'm not, but we all know about what happened to me.
Right. But I think it's just a way to keep that paranoia up. Like, don't forget, he's still not sure what's going on.
No, I got it, but he's a fucking moron. I wish I'd pointed out over it, but I have like 7 examples of him being fucking stupid over the course of this.
Which would also work for, like, you know, if you are not indeed a secret agent, or that you're a secret agent, but you're undercover of not being a secret agent, you would do these things that aren't secret agent-y.
Yeah, he checks in and he's like, all right, so I have to go to the, what's it, like the Louche district? It's not Louche. I'm the only person that would ever use that word. The fucking district. I don't remember what they call it. And he gets in
Pleasure
a cab.
Street, like in Valerian.
Sure. He gets in a cab with what can only be described as like a Sidney Poitier level acting job that really shows the faith. It's just this racist caricature and it made me sad. It's just a jive talking cabbie.
Yeah.
And it's up there with a Naked Gun where he's like, oh, that old lady's like, oh, excuse me, I speak jive. And it's just gross. And it just, at the time, I'm sure it wasn't even that bad. I know it wasn't that bad at the time, but.
Do you remember Mirror Man?
No.
Mirror Man was a character in Gone in 60 Seconds that was 100 times worse than this guy. The Nicolas Cage movie.
Yeah, I do kind of remember that.
Yeah. So this went on. I mean, it's still going on, but it's been on for quite a long time.
I mean, like, I'm not a person of color. Like, it's not my offense to be offended by, but like, man, that was rough. Because here's the thing: is a spoiler for a later movie. It turns out that he's a traitor.
Mm-hmm.
But he keeps the accent. If that was his accent, if that was his traitor accent, that he's like, oh, I'm being a double agent, and then like he's like, oh, well, you found me out. I'm actually like, but no, he just keeps the just jivey McRacist accent. I don't know where Mick, definitely not that, but
well, so, but then the question becomes, is the movie racist or is Arnold's or is Douglas Quaid's idea of this racist?
I will answer with this. Or is Recall racist? Paul Verhoeven.
Okay. Well, he is Dutch. There you go.
Yeah. Venusville.
Venusville.
So he goes and he meets the three-titted lady, which we discussed later, and up there with Gul Dukat, Hank Schrader's in this movie.
Yes.
Fucking Dean Norris is in this movie.
Yeah.
Which, how? Dean Norris must be 20 years older than I think he is.
Mm-hmm.
Because he is like a full-ass grown man in 1990, and then 20 years later, he's the same age in Breaking Bad.
Yeah, I mean, because he looks the same in Starship Troopers as well.
Yes. I forgot he was in Starship Troopers.
Yeah, he's one of those people that he just picked an age and kind of stuck with it.
Yeah, I mean, good for him. Anyway, he beats Melina.
You're also introduced to a person with a brief screen time, but who just magnifies whatever scene she's in. Thumbelina, the little person prostitute, just kicks so much ass in this movie.
Her going, she is so fucking charming. She's like, hey, if you need any help with that one, she is so goddamn charming. Yeah.
And then just later with the machine gun, just kicks so much.
She's great. I'm so glad she doesn't get shot. Yeah.
Yeah. And they and they expertly they give you just enough. They don't spend a lot of time with that character, but you just when she shows up, you're like, hell yeah.
Yeah, she's got charisma. I like that one.
Yeah.
I thought what I was like, reacting to on camera only is that weird guy that only plays basically Nazi doctors shows up in his hotel room. He's like, hi, I'm a construct that's sending your brain from recall to try to...
Dr. Edgemar. Yeah.
And it's a really nice scene. And he brings his, like, in quotes, wife in. This is where the movie starts to really kind of... The kind of psychedelic, I don't know what the fuck's happening starts to really ramp up.
Yeah, because they bring that back because they've started to establish that, like, no, everything you knew was wrong. You've been lied to. This is uncovered that you're really Quaid. And then they throw this wrench in of like, none of this might actually be happening. And I love that actor's voice, Roy Brocksmith. He's got a very particular kind of voice, and it works well, I think, for that character.
I think he might be in the MCU. I think he plays robot Nazi guy in the MCU. Isn't that him?
No, that's it's Toby Keith. What's that guy's name?
No, Tobias. That's the other one. I get him confused too. Yeah, that guy. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of. But anyway, he comes in with the logic. He's like, so Quaid's like, no, it's real. I dreamed about her before I ever went. And he's like, she's real because you dreamed her? It's like, oh, dude, you were fucking tearing this movie down. It's great. But Arnold sees that he's... Wait, before we do that. Sorry, we missed Lana and Lainey Wachowski, which I don't know if that's both their names. Way to steal from a better movie, where he offers a red pill to learn the truth about everything to get him out.
Well,
I wonder where that's from.
Just to escape him, this guy, Dr. Edgemar, comes in and goes like, hey, right now you're still in the chair in recall and you're having a schizoid embolism. You got to take this pill, which your subconscious will recognize as like a way out. You got to take this to get out. And Arnold's like, this is bullshit, and puts a gun to his head. And he just starts explaining to him, like, if you shoot me, this reality is going to collapse around you. The walls of this reality are going to collapse around you. All this stuff's going to happen. You're going to die in the chair. And isn't scared that the gun's on him. He's more just angry about it. He's more like, no, take the fucking pill, man. You're not doing well. That's why they sent me in. I'm the head of the company. And I'm just this construct in here to try to save you. And then, Arnold notices a bead of sweat on him and is like, well, this is clearly fake. Pretends to take the pill and then shoots him in the head. And then immediately the walls collapse because the bad guys have found him.
Well, no. Yeah, correct. But the one quick thing happens before that. He murders his wife and says, consider that a divorce.
Yes, that's also true.
From your perspective, that is your loving wife of 8 years until a week ago, where you're slightly confused whether or not she's on your side.
But
you
she didn't beat 8 him up.
Years. What's that?
She did beat him 8 up. 8 years times.
Of loving memory. I've been watching the Johnny Depp trial. He, at no point did he murder her. He remembered. Yeah. I don't know. That was just a dumb topical reference. The point is, he's got 8 years of fucking good memories in his brain.
Well,
he just murders her and says a hilarious quip afterwards.
But that's not till later.
No, it's now.
A little bit later because when the bad guys come in, they capture him, and then Melina shows up in an elevator and then shoots her. And that's another great moment of Sharon Stone, like, turning it off and on, because she's just about ready to kill Melina and has a knife. Schwarzenegger shoots it out of her hand, and when she sees him, her face immediately softens and is like, it's like, oh, hey, like, we're still cool, right? It's very much like it's like when a baby knows it's in trouble and it's kind of like, what if I was cute? You're not gonna get mad at me if I'm cute. But he does.
Use the same move.
Yeah,
it's
it works on me every time. It's frustrating, but I keep falling for it.
Well, I'm sorry, John.
Damn it, you're doing it again. But no, it's a great moment because the way the movie is telling you, like, aha, look, it's fake. He's sweating, so it can't be real. But then it's also like, but if he's made this all up, why couldn't he just imagine that? It's not a definitive answer, but to him it is.
But let's back up a little bit here. That actor doesn't look like he's in good shape. He's been talking a lot. And he's got a gun pulled on him. I feel like sweating is a reaction that would happen to a variety of emotional states. That is not conclusive evidence in any direction.
Yeah. Plus it's, no, that's it. That's it. You're.
So the next note I have is where the movie gets uber violent is, Michael Ironside and, his crew featuring Gold Dukat, run into Venusville and just start slaughtering everyone, including three tits.
Yeah. She shoots her in the back.
Yeah, which is so stupid because she's got three fake tits. Why not squib her boobs and have him shoot her in the tits?
Because it's not that cruel. If this were a horror movie. Yeah, I know, but it's there's so many other people to kill. Like, why spend time with this one?
Nonsense. I want squib tits.
But this is also the point, and I suppose it's, you know, with works also with the walls of reality collapsing in on itself. Where like the last half hour of this movie is like basically just a protracted gun battle.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And I don't even mean that in like it's awesome. It kind of gets tiresome, but it's just an action.
It does
scene.
Get tired. There are the highlights make up for the weariness because there are some really good. There's some good kills in here. So anyway, yeah. So he finds out that the cabbie is in fact a mutant because he's got a weird crab claw.
Yes, because they get in contact with Quado. The gorillas.
So the cabbie brings him to Quado. And Quado looks like wet Patton Oswalt. And he's open your mind. And he's remembers that there's a whole alien civilization and he has to free the air and start the reactor that we saw a little bit earlier. And it is revealed that Benny the cab driver betrayed them.
Yes.
And they break in and they shoot Quado and there's a headshot on a puppet. There's so it's many brutal. Headshots in this movie, but they headshot a puppet, which I'm like, I'm not sure I've ever seen a headshot to a puppet before.
No. And it was, it hurt to watch. But one thing, talking about Quado is just, they can't find him because Quado is a mutant. He's a guy, like a guy that lives in another guy's stomach basically. Cause he has to like, he's not just like a vestigial twin because the other guy has to like go in this like trance and Quado comes out. And
that's how it works for me. Yeah.
It's a little bit like the puppeteer in Scarface in Batman, but
yes,
but the Cronenberg version. But so I was thinking about that in the context of like this sort of dual reality of what Quado is showing him exactly. Because if you're like, well, this is dream, then yeah, it's whatever. If it's more this paranoid reality, like is what's he seeing? Like, is he seeing his memories as Hauser down there? Or is Quado showing him some kind of like Jungian subconscious that we all share that showed him where that, you know what I mean? Like I started thinking about like, what actually is he seeing?
I think what we're meant to take away from that is that because Hauser knows about the air machine. And I think he's showing him just the parts of Hauser's memory without Hauser's personality coming out. So
that's kind of what I took it as.
Morality, but with Hauser's memory.
Yeah. Because that's sort of an interesting idea, too, is like, because has it been revealed yet that he's Hauser? I don't remember. I don't remember the order. It's after. Yeah.
You wouldn't want to spoil that. It's almost immediately afterwards.
Yeah. Because once they shoot him.
Yeah. So they get caught. And Ronnie Cox is like, well, let me show you a little video to explain everything. And it's a video of him as Hauser talking. He's like, well, it turns out that blah, blah, blah. I double crossed myself and now I'm going to put my own memories back in. But let's just talk about consent here for a second. That is his body.
Mm-hmm.
Just from a, you know, kind of, you don't have rights to this.
Right.
I'm just saying that Hauser, although the villain, might be like a little right, like a skosh right.
No, sure. Like that he's, yeah, this is a fake, Quaid isn't entirely a fake personality. Yeah. But I mean, what makes him any less real than the rest of us?
Well, one's on videotape with Ronnie Cox.
Yeah. Is he, though? Because the technology, you can add Ronnie Cox in anything these days.
But not in those these days, where the past future, days of future past.
In those these days... That wasn't even. There's no law that says a dog can't play basketball.
But, But dozy dotes and dozy dotes, but bears eat their picnic or something. So,
but I do love that shot of like that's on the video screen. It's Quay, it's Hauser and Cohagen like shaking hands and being like ha ha ha.
Yeah.
And in between the shot is that video screen in between Ronnie Cox and Quaid like staring at each other.
Yeah.
And I like that.
No, it was really nice. So what they try to lead to is he's going to put Quaid back in the chair to get Hauser back. And he brings Lady in with him. Sorry to just call her that, but I mean, Melina.
Yeah, Melina. Yeah. I think I've been calling her Melina the whole time. I think it's... No, it's Melina.
Okay. So Melina in the chair. And the most violent sequence in the movie erupts after having every sequence being the most violent. Where... He Arnolds his way out of the chair by ripping the arm off, which takes a piece of pipe with it, and then clubs the pipe through another dude's head straight through, like from stem to stern, completely mm-hmm. skewered by it, hits another dude and like half his face gets torn off. Like it is fucking violent.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And then Ronnie Cox finds out, and the worst bit of violence, Ronnie Cox kills his fish.
Yes, it's terrible.
He kicks his fish tank over.
Unnecessary.
I mean, my heart broke, man. My heart broke.
But I wonder if you could make an argument about sort of the violence. I mean, because it's been pretty violent up to this point, but it gets pretty absurd at that point. If you're going, he's in a chair, and like, if he is indeed like this schizoid embolism thing is happening, so that's like the deterioration. It's just getting this more like... wild and gory and animal.
I think that's how it's supposed to. I mean, that's how it read to me, is like how it picks up being violent. Cause, this is where the chase sequence happens of him trying to get down to the reactor. Michael Ironside's and his goons are after him, and he uses the hologram that got set up earlier that we bring up and blah, blah, blah. But the point is, he gets to this elevator and he gets in a fight with Michael Ironside's. And the result is Ironside's is half hanging off the elevator. He moves up, and his arms are fucking chopped off, and then his torso falls to his death. It is a brutal, brutal fucking end for a delightful bad guy.
Yeah, and like he really, I mean, he's a monster. Don't get me wrong. Like he's mad, but like he kind of got a raw deal in all this. His boss doesn't tell him what's going on. He sets up his girlfriend to, be the fake wife and have sex with Arnold Schwarzenegger. And then yells at him for not knowing what's going on. And then he gets killed.
Yeah.
Like it's, it's a bummer deal.
It is a bummer deal, but
you know, he killed a bunch of people. So screw
him. Yeah. I'm sure he's probably murdered children for Ronnie Cox earlier, a bunch of mutant kids. Mm-hmm. One of the worst, I think this establishes the Arnold doing a line before he kills people. See you at the party, Richter.
That's just a classic Arnold. I mean, saying one-liners, that's been around for as long as Arnold has.
I don't think so, though. Have
you seen Commando? He says that shit all the time.
Oh, are there quips in Commando?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay. I was trying to think of where that started from, and I can only think of, like, post this movie.
No, there are other ones. I mean...
Yeah.
Yeah. But I was thinking about the Cohagen and Mars... And how, like, because at this point, like, he's one of the big, like, ticking clocks is that they've shut down the air to Venusville. So all these people are dying. And he's like, well, we'll just, we'll blame the gorillas for it. And I was thinking about Elon Musk. And I wonder if he saw this movie and went like, wait a minute, I could charge people for air. Let's do it. Let's go to Mars. We got to go to Mars. And I can make people buy my air and force them to look at my memes.
Truth. Yeah. There's,
I hope he gets thrown out of a window in Mars and his
all of Mars runs on Dogecoin.
Oh God!
So they get to the Martian technology, and he's trying to start the reactor, and Ronnie Cox shows up, and I don't remember how, but he gets sucked out into the vacuum of Mars.
Yeah, well, because in activating the there's a I think he turns something on, like it starts this vacuum that's going to suck people away, because the whole thing with the reactor is
it's Ronnie Cox sets up a bomb on the thing that can start the reactor, Then yes. Arnold throws the bomb at the wall. The wall explodes. And then they get sucked out. This was very important. I needed to qualify that. I'm glad I interrupted you.
No, it's fine.
In this already too long episode to equivocate the tiniest little bit of minutia.
But anyway, the idea is that the reactor is going to melt some a bit of the pterillium core, whatever it is, and that will oxygenate the planet. How that thing gets powered doesn't matter. It's the only tech, whatever. And then Arnold is able to survive being sucked out long enough to activate the reactor. And then both he and Melina and Cohagen are outside and their eyes are bulging out. Their faces are exploding because of the pressure.
But they do a great effect.
Yeah, I love it. But they get away. They had to
make three of those fucking puppet heads. That's crazy.
And just like all the different animations it took, like for the way the foreheads move and the eyes, like just different people operating it. It's so cool. But they managed to get air back just in time. Cohagen, not so lucky. He's dead. But oh my God, blue skies on Mars.
Yeah, they did it.
And which actually I think is the name of the package, I think. Or
it was referenced earlier in the recall thing, blue skies on Mars. So that's it. Total recall.
Well, they kiss and he's like, how do I know this is not a dream? She's like, well, kiss me before you wake up. And as they kiss, there's like the light behind him becomes all bright before it goes to credits. So that could either be like just the sun or him getting lobotomized.
Mm.
Whichever way you want to take it. But I like it.
Yeah.
And I think like I said before, this doesn't confront you with those things as hard as Minority Report does. It certainly like key plot elements kind of hinge on the what is real, what isn't. But I do think it's very sort of very cool, for lack of any sort of vocabulary whatsoever, for Verhoeven to have shoved this super high concept thing into an action movie that like did really, really well.
Yeah.
At, you know, for an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie, the people are just like, oh, they want to watch him blow up stuff. And like, no, here's some actual hardcore sci-fi stuff.
Yeah, totally. Hard recommend for me. I got no real.
Yeah.
Even if you don't want to think about it, really enjoyable movie.
It's big, dumb fun. And if you want to spend a little bit more time thinking about it, go for it. And I think Verhoeven lets you do either of those things. Yeah.
Big, dumb fun with some depth behind it that if you want to, but if you want to ignore the depth, you still get like a violent, ridiculous action movie from the 80s.
It doesn't expend its time, a lot of time holding your hand or like talking down to you, which is presents things as is. And if you want to have fun with that, you know.
Hey, speaking of that, is Michael Ironsides in the Expendables? Because he totally should be.
No, but he should. I mean, he should be in most things.
Yeah.
But I don't. I've never seen The Expendables, so I don't know.
You're really missing out on just, you know, a movie. Things it's exactly what expending. You think it is. Yeah. Yeah. All right. So recommendations for me. I have whiffed on everything. I've been watching Picard, which went from tolerable to terrible. I went from Moon Knight, which went from really good to, that's pretty much what I thought was going to happen. The only thing I'm really liking right now is I'm rewatching The Leftovers because I realized I never finished that show and it's really fucking good. But I've already watched it and it's like a decade old. So
I've heard it was good. It's recommended to me, but like I've been hurt by Lindelof before and I'm hesitant to go back.
So I never finished it, but the reason that it spawned it is some podcasts I was listening to was referencing it and saying that they landed the ending super, super well. Like it's a cohesive story, which made me think, oh, I should go back and revisit, but I barely remember it. So I'm starting from the start.
It would be interesting to see him actually get something right after Lost and Watchmen. But, for me, I saw The Northman and I really liked it. A little bit more straightforward than Eggers' other movies, but, just big Viking epic. It's kind of a small story. I guess it's based on the myth that Hamlet is based on, which I did not know that was a thing, but,
there's a book in the, 60s or 70s called Hamlet's Mill. It's kind of foundational text for alternate history buffs. And one of the things they cite frequently is that there's a Norse thing that's essentially Hamlet, which is also Hamlet, and they have no connection to one another other than being the exact same fucking story. Yeah.
Wild. But yeah, it's absolutely worth checking out. And if you can do it safely, seeing it on a big screen is super rad.
John.
Yes.
I have made you this little origami kind of horse.
Oh, that's nice.
I don't know why I made it, but I'm just going to give you this, and maybe you can tell us about what we're watching next time.
It's too bad I won't live. But then again, who does? Me. I've decided I'm still going to be alive. That's the end of the original Blade Runner. But what we're going to do is watch Blade Runner, the final cut. After 4 or 5 different cuts, this is the one Ridley Scott said, yeah, this is the one I want. So we're going to give that one based on Philip K. Dick's short story, Philip K. Dick's book, Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? We're going to answer those questions and so much more.
I mean, we're not, but, you know.
I am. That's all I'm going to do.
Oh, cool. I'm just going to show up and fucking look sexy as I do every time.
Great.
Which, by the way, really bad idea given this is an audio-only podcast.
Well, yeah, I like to keep you for myself.
Perfect. Please remember to rate, review, subscribe, and do the things that you've kind of in the back of your head every time you hear me say this. You're like, oh, I really should do that. Or you feel like a niggling little like bit of like guilt. Just like do it. It takes like 4 seconds. And then I can stop getting emails from Chartable that 1 week brags about us being number whatever in some market, and the next week saying the word out under that same market, which hurts wow, my really? Fucking soul. Yep.
You should just not get those emails.
Okay. So rate, review, subscribe, do all those things. The more of you that do it, the less I'll say this. So
yeah.
If anything, shut me up.
Please do.
All right. Bye.
Goodbye.